This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, Health and Healing. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by Africa News Panorama. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Francis at a general audience on Wednesday continued his catechesis on virtues and vices, focusing this week on the virtue of patience. Addressing the thousands gathered in the Paul VI hall, the Pope invited the faithful to imitate Christ's patience, saying this virtue offers one of the most convincing testimonies of the Lord's love. Deborah Castellano-Lubov reports.
La virtù della pazienza.
Even if often it is not easy, when a Christian practices the difficult virtue of patience, they bear witness to Christ's love. Pope Francis made this point during his weekly general audience on Wednesday of Holy Week, which was originally scheduled to be held in St. Peter's Square, but was moved inside the Vatican's Paul VI hall at the last minute due to the rain.
Grazie della vostra pazienza.
Acknowledging the change in location due to the weather, the Holy Father joked, "It is true that you will be rather crowded, but at least we will not get wet." At the root of patience, the Pope stressed, is love. Even if being patient often is difficult, the Holy Father reminded those before him of how patient the Lord is with us.
Che non c'è migliore testimonianza dell'amore di Gesù che incontrare un cristiano paziente.
It could be said, he observed, that there is no better testimony of Christ's love than meeting a patient Christian. But think, the Holy Father marveled, of how many mothers and fathers, workers, doctors, nurses, the sick, who every day, in obscurity, he said, grace the world with saintly patience. However, let us be honest, Pope Francis admitted, we are often lacking in patience. If Christ is patient, the Christian is called to be patient, he underscored, saying this requires going against the prevailing mentality today, where haste and everything now dominate. The Pope encouraged the faithful to remember the patience of the Father in the story of the prodigal son, and asked how we can cultivate our patience.
Per coltivare la pazienza.
Responding that we can do so by seeking help from the Holy Spirit, the Pope said he gives us the gentle strength of patience. Especially in these days of Holy Week, the Pope invited everyone to contemplate the crucified Christ, to learn and follow his patient example.
Dio vi benedica.
I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
In remarks after his catechesis, Pope Francis made fresh appeals for peace in Ukraine and the Middle East and greeted two men in the hall, one Israeli and one Palestinian, saying they both lost their daughters in the ongoing Israel-Hamas war. He described the men he had met briefly before the audience as two friends. They do not look at the enmity of war, he said. They look to the friendship of two men who came about each other and have experienced the same crucifixion. Let us think of the beautiful witness of these two people who have suffered the war in the Holy Land and in the loss of their daughters, added the Pope. Addressing them as dear brothers, the Holy Father thanked them for their witness. In a post on the messaging platform Telegram, the director of the press office of the Holy See named the two men as Bassam Aramin, a Palestinian, and Rami Elhanan, an Israeli of the Parents Circle Families Forum, an Israeli-Palestinian group that brings together relatives of victims of the conflict. In his address to Italian-speaking pilgrims, Pope Francis said, "Brothers and sisters, let us pray for peace. May the Lord grant peace to martyred Ukraine as it suffers heavy bombardment and to Israel and Palestine. May there be peace in the Holy Land," said the Pope. He concluded by praying that the Lord might grant the gift of his peace to all this Easter. In a letter for Easter, published on Wednesday, addressed to Catholics in the Holy Land, Pope Francis expresses his spiritual closeness and paternal affection and encourages Christians around the world to offer concrete support and prayers for peace. Christopher Wells reports.
Pope Francis has written Catholics in the Holy Land, assuring them that they are daily in his thoughts and prayers. I embrace all of you and the variety of your rights, dear Catholic faithful living throughout the Holy Land, he writes, adding, in a particular way, I embrace those most affected by the senseless tragedy of war, the children robbed of their future, those who grieve and are in pain, and all who find themselves prey to anguish and dismay. In his letter, the Holy Father recognizes the special significance of Easter for those who live in the places sanctified by Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. Acknowledging the desire of Christians to remain in the lands they have dwelt in for centuries, Pope Francis says it is good that they should remain, and he thanks them for their faith, charity, and hope. The Pope goes on to recall his own pilgrimage to the Holy Land in 2014 and repeats the words of St. Paul VI, who warned of the constant and dire threat to peace and security and to human values of continuing tensions in the Middle East. Pope Francis highlights the role of Christians in the Middle East in guarding the places of our salvation, as well as their enduring witness through their sufferings to the mystery of the Lord's Passion. By your ability to rise anew and press forward, he writes, you have proclaimed and continue to proclaim that the crucified Lord rose from the dead. The Pope goes on to share the prayer that he offers for and with the Christians of the Holy Land, and then assures them once again that they are not alone. Pope Francis pledges to demonstrate solidarity through prayer and practical charity. Then, after thanking the bishops, priests, and religious for their work among the people, the Holy Father prays that in the crucible of suffering, the precious gold of unity may be purified and shine forth among Catholics and with other Christians, to whom he expresses his spiritual closeness and encouragement, assuring them of his prayers. Concluding his letter, Pope Francis invokes upon Catholics in the Holy Land the protection of the Blessed Virgin Mary, whom he describes as a daughter of their land. And he calls on Christians throughout the world to manifest their concrete support and to pray tirelessly that all the people of that beloved land may dwell at last in peace. I'm Christopher Wells.
On this day, 11 years ago, Pope Francis held his first general audience, during which he appealed for an end to violence and conflict in the Central African Republic in the wake of a coup in the African nation a few days earlier. The Central African Republic was the last stop of his three-nation apostolic trip to Africa in November 2015. In his reflection at the beginning of that 27th March 2013 general audience, which also fell on Holy Week, he recalled his predecessor, the late Pope Benedict XVI, and lamented a rising number of closed parish churches in the developed world. The Holy Father has appointed Father John Kiplimo Lelei as Auxiliary Bishop of Eldoret Diocese in Kenya, at the same time assigning him the titular see of Monte di Numidia. Bishop-elect Lelei is of the clergy of Eldoret and has been serving as Vicar General of the same diocese. He was born on the 15th of August 1958 in Soy, in the Diocese of Eldoret. He was ordained a priest on the 26th of October 1985 for the Diocese of Eldoret. The bishop-elect has served in several capacities in his diocese and elsewhere since his ordination to the priesthood. He holds a doctorate in theology, specializing in liturgy, awarded by the University of Vienna, Austria. Pope Francis will preside at the Chrism Mass on Holy Thursday in St. Peter's Basilica, beginning at 9:30 a.m. local time in Rome. On Holy Thursday evening, the Holy Father is scheduled to preside at Mass of the Lord's Supper at Rome's Rebibbia Women's Prison. To follow our live broadcast in English of the Mass of the Lord's Supper on shortwave radio, tune in to the 15565 kHz frequency on the 19-meter band. The Mass begins at 15:50 p.m. Rome time or 14:50 GMT. For the Stations of the Cross or Via Crucis at Rome's Colosseum on Good Friday evening, the frequency is 11870 kHz on the 25-meter band. You can also follow the Easter Vigil Mass on Holy Saturday in St. Peter's Square from the same frequency, that is, the 11870 kHz on the 25-meter band, the Mass of the Day on Easter Sunday morning, and the Ubi et Orbi message and blessing to the city of Rome and to the world will be broadcast live on the 17540 kHz frequency on the 16-meter band. You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The government of Uganda has ordered all civil servants to do physical exercises for 2 hours a week. In a circular, the head of the public service, Lucy Nachobe, said the sessions would help save the lives of staff and reduce the disease burden. It is not yet clear how the directive will be enforced, but an official of the Ministry of Health told reporters in Kampala on Tuesday that the ministry was already running exercise sessions for its staff. The government directive comes after a national health survey which showed that the rate of obesity in the country had risen from 17% to 26% in the last 17 years. The government of South Sudan has said schools will reopen next week following a 2-week closure triggered by extreme heat waves across the country. The ministries of health and education said on Tuesday that temperatures were expected to steadily drop in the coming days as the rainy season approaches. Last week, the country registered 45 degrees Celsius. The Ministry of Education has appealed to teachers when classes resume to minimize playground activities to early morning or indoors, ventilate classrooms, provide water during school time, and monitor children for signs of heat exhaustion and heat stroke. South Sudan is one of the African countries that are experiencing the effects of climate change, including heavy rains that cause floods, extreme heat, and long droughts. Voters in Cameroon will go to the polls next year to elect a president and members of parliament. Officials close to the incumbent Paul Biya, who is now 91 years old, have publicly encouraged him to run for office again. Reports from the country say Mr. Biya is very weak and that he has lost touch with what is going on in the country. He has been president of Cameroon since 1982. A court in the United States of America has sentenced a Guinea-Bissau national, Malam Bakay Sanya Jr., to over 6 years in jail for his involvement in drug trafficking. He is the son of the former Guinea-Bissau president Malam Bakay Sanya, who led the country from 2009 until his death in 2012. Sanya Jr. was extradited to the United States of America in 2022 from Tanzania, where he was hiding. He told a court on Tuesday that he was trafficking drugs to get money to fund a coup d'etat in his country with the hope of becoming a president. And now, our feature, Health and Healing. In this week's edition, we have good news for sub-Saharan Africa. The third phase of the new malaria vaccine, known as the R21 Matrix, was completed by scientists from Oxford University a few weeks ago in Kenya, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Tanzania. And the results are promising. The vaccine efficacy, that is, its potential to reduce malaria infections in the vaccinated children, was found to be 77% in the 4 countries. The vaccine is safe, that is, it does not cause harm to the person who has been vaccinated. I repeat, this is good news for sub-Saharan Africa because in 2022, the region registered 233 million malaria cases, 508,000 of whom died of the disease that same year. 80% of the cases and death were children below 5 years of age. The first malaria vaccine was known as the RTSS, which was developed by the GlaxoSmithKline Pharmaceutical Company. It was approved by the World Health Organization in 2021. When it was tried in children, it had the efficacy of just 36%. Last year, the World Health Organization approved a second vaccine, the R21 Matrix, whose potential to prevent malaria infections, as we have already said, is high. Professor Adrian Hill is a medical doctor and a specialist in vaccines.
He is also a lecturer of vaccinology at the University of Oxford in Britain. He was part of the team that developed the R21 matrix malaria vaccine. He explains first why it has taken long to develop an efficacious malaria vaccine.
People have been trying to make malaria vaccines since about 1908. It hasn't been easy. It's not like there's been no funding for malaria, but it has taken a very long time, and it's a disease that's killing well over 500,000 people a year still now in 2024. Firstly, parasites are quite large. There are over 5,000 genes in the malaria parasite's genome. Scholars have argued for decades over which of those genes encoding a particular antigen might be best put into a vaccine. And happily, there's a fairly good consensus. Both of the two new vaccines use a circumsporozoic protein as the antigen. So we're very much agreed on that. And of course, the parasite has multiple life cycle stages. It's not just like a virus where if you tackle it once and knock it out with malaria, if you don't knock it out as soon as it gets injected by a mosquito, it hides in the liver for a week where it's pretty untouchable by antibodies. And then those parasites can multiply 20,000 times within a single liver cell, become blood stage parasites, and express completely different antigens. So if you have a very good vaccine against the first stage of the life cycle, it won't do anything against the blood stage. So that's difficult. And then finally, the life cycles continued through a mosquito where again the parasite has changed and produced again different antigens. You know, they've really been in parallel groups working on three different targets for malaria because the antigens are so difficult at different stages. And at the end, having got to the finish, is that it turns out you need extremely high antibody levels to protect at any of those stages.
Of the two malaria vaccines approved by the World Health Organization, the R21 matrix has shown that it is the most effective, especially because it meets the international standards of 75% efficacy. Professor Hill explains the steps in the improvement of the vaccine and how the R21 matrix vaccine came into being.
The RTSS vaccine, that's the GSK vaccine, is mid-1980s, whereas our vaccine was conceived in 2011. It existed to vaccinate mice by 2012, so it's 25 years younger than the GSK. There have been some improvements. The first moment was in the mid-90s when the RTSS vaccine was being tested for the first time. And in the next couple of years, it was clear it was actually protecting maybe half the people who were vaccinated. That was in adults. It was in challenge model where we deliberately infect individuals and, of course, treat them if they do get malaria. That was a big step forward. Nobody had really shown any efficacy before the mid-90s with any malaria vaccine for humans. And people were hopeful that, well, if you can get 50%, you can push it up towards 70, 80, 90% you would usually get with a vaccine. And that turned out really not to be the case with RTSS. It did improve a bit with different immunization regimens. But overall, in its phase 3 trial, the efficacy was 50 to 55%. And then, very unluckily, in 2015, that GSK vaccine appeared to have an important safety problem in the children it was used to vaccinate. And that was a very odd doubling of mortality in girls compared to boys and compared to the controls. Regulators at WHO insisted really on a very big safety trial that took, well, delayed things 8 or 9 years. In the meantime, of course, vaccinology advances, as you've seen recently with COVID, new types of vaccine. We use a particular nanoparticle based on the hepatitis B vaccine. So there's actually some of the vaccine against hepatitis B in the malaria vaccine, and it's used as a scaffold to turn the malaria vaccine into a sphere. The other key ingredient is an adjuvant. You need a very potent adjuvant that will make those antibody responses as high as possible. And we used an adjuvant from a company called Novavax that had been around for several years. It was somewhat related to the GSK adjuvant, but distinct. And that's been It's very important for our program. But the most important development really was finding a manufacturer who happens to be the world's largest vaccine manufacturer, the Serum Institute of India in Pune in India, who do very large-scale manufacture of many vaccines, particularly for lower-income country markets. And they were very keen on malaria and visited us in 2017. And we've been working with them since.
As we have already indicated, the ADA 21 matrix vaccine completed the third phase trial last year. Professor Healy explains some of their discoveries during the trials.
We chose four of the sites, two in East Africa, two in West Africa, sites that differed in their seasonality. Sometimes when the rains are very seasonal, say in West Africa, you get the peak of malaria transmission a few months later. And we managed to find both seasonal and what we call perennial non-seasonal sites. What we've learned in the malaria field is the best age to vaccinate is between 5 and 12 months of age. If you go in earlier, the antibody responses are really much weaker. So you can't vaccinate at 1, 2, and 3 months of age. And if you delay till 2 or 3 years of age, the antibody titers aren't as good again. So we are deploying this year in really 5, 6, 7 olds to get the antibody responses as durable as possible.
According to Professor Hill, to have an impact, the ADA 21 matrix vaccine will have to be produced in big quantities so that each vaccinable child in Africa can get the required doses in time.
In about 2000, there were 1 million children dying each year in Africa alone from malaria. And then the world woke up a bit. A lot of more money went into global health. There hadn't been nearly enough going in the 1990s. Bed nets started to be used more widely. Insecticide-treated bed nets helped out. Drugs were looked at again to give preventatively to young children, and they've made a contribution. And spraying as well had been around for a long time. So really fairly traditional measures were deployed much more successfully. So that by 2015, we were down to about 500,000 deaths. That was costing millions a year, but it was cost effective. And then the numbers started to creep up again, not just due to the pandemic, but of course, populations are growing in Africa all the time. So from 2017 till now, the numbers have been pretty similar, about 650,000 childhood and adult deaths a year. Mainly children in sub-Saharan Africa. So that really points to what the impact of these vaccines could be. If you can roll them out successfully, and the regimen is a four-dose regime with three doses close together and a booster a year later. If you could do that, we think you could save hundreds of thousands of lives, get that number down from 500,000, 600,000 to maybe 100,000 deaths just by implementing one of those vaccines widely. That points to what's really crucial with a malaria vaccine. You've got to have enough of it to impact on disease. The other key point is there are other populations who need a malaria vaccine. For example, pregnant women in Africa can die of malaria. Very often they have stillbirths because the parasite really bizarrely likes to live in the placenta. So the stillbirth rate is high. We're starting a trial in the coming weeks on women in Africa who intend to become pregnant to see if we can protect them. There's the other important malaria parasite, Plasmodium vivax. We're partnered with Serum Institute to make that vaccine as well. There are candidate vaccines coming along for the other stages, like blood stage. Then most important of all, this is a disease we should be able to eradicate. There have been attempts in the past. They were underpowered. There was no vaccine. There were less effective tools. But certainly in the next decade, I think if we provided the money needed to control malaria very efficiently with new tools, we should be able to eliminate in many countries soon and eradicate globally by the mid-2030s.
Professor Hill encourages families in Africa whose children have been vaccinated against malaria to continue to use also the traditional preventive tools such as treated bed nets, indoor spraying, and insecticides, because this increases the chances of success in the fight against the transmission of the disease.
There's no suggestion you should stop using existing tools and just use a vaccine. The vaccine individually is probably more effective than any of those single tools, but the combination is at least additive. If you give drugs and bed nets, as well as vaccines, if you can get 70% efficacy with each, the two together combine. The key question is, what can we afford? Last year, and for the last 5 years, about $4 billion a year is spent not on malaria research, but on deploying tools like bed nets and insecticides. When a vaccine comes along, you can do the calculation that our vaccine is $3.9 a dose. If you're distributing 100 million doses of that, you're still at less than half a billion, and $4 billion is being used on the other tools. So this is very good value for money. So if you add that all together, yeah, we're going to be spending $4 to $5 over the next 5 years on all of those tools combined. But if you can eradicate malaria, you get your money back. You won't be spending money on any insecticide-treated bed nets or on vaccines or other interventions. So if it costs twice as much per year to mount an eradication campaign and that were likely to be successful, that's a bargain, because you would stop spending the $5 billion from that day onwards.
Professor Adrian Hill, a vaccinologist and lecturer in vaccinology at Oxford University in Britain. He was part of the team that developed the ADA21 matrix malaria vaccine. And that was Health and Healing for this week. This has been Johnny Baptist Tomosime.
You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.